Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. And, oh, just a minute. So sorry there. Something got in my throat. If you are a person that has, just agonized over things in your life, and you wonder, how can you get past being a worrywart? Well, we're going to be talking about that this afternoon. And this is a delightful interview because Dr. Beverly Potter is my guest today. Welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm delighted to be with you today.
Well, I am really pleased to be able to talk with someone who is really an expert on worry warts because, boy, I've had my share of that, and I know so many of my listeners just get so anxious about things. Now, I want them to know a little bit about you. You got your doctorate in counseling psychology from Stanford University and your master's degree in vocational rehabilitation counseling from San Francisco State University. You like to challenge the rules, my kind of gal. I think that's wonderful. But you have found that you wanted to explore a number of different modalities. You've published so many books, including books on burnout. But you decided to address worry. Well, there's a lot of people that are sitting in their own worry pot right now. There's so much that they're bombarded with every day. Maybe they've lost a job. Maybe there's stuff on the news. By the time they finish watching it, they just go into this mental tirade of anxiousness. What is it that caused you to write this book? Why did you think that this was a subject that needed to be addressed?
Well, at some time or another, everybody's afflicted with worry warting. So it's something universal among all people, and it detracts from our quality of life, and we're not really achieving anything. But the reason that I did the book was actually a worry wart who was a publisher approached me and nudged me. At first, I didn't want to do it, but it's a challenge to analyze and get right down to exactly how worry works, the mechanism, what is it good for, how do we deal with it, and how do we worry smart? Because the idea is to not worry. Worry is good, but worry warding is the problem. We often think of it as obsessing,
mm-hmm.
You know, going around and around like a loop. And worry is us talking to ourselves about a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and so we want to worry because it's a mental fire drill.
Interesting.
You say you can look into the future, see a potential problem. Hopefully it won't happen, but if it does, we're prepared. We have a plan. We don't like it, but we have a plan, just like with a fire. If you didn't have a fire drill, people could get into a panic. There would be much more possibility of injury.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So we need to worry, but the problem with worry warding is it's not productive. In fact, it just makes matters worse because the person talks to themselves in a way where they scare themselves to death. They get into rut thinking, extreme things, kind of, you know, seeing catastrophes and not solving anything. And the thing about worry is that worry triggers anxiety, and anxiety triggers more worry. So it becomes a vicious cycle that you can't get out of.
One of the aspects that I really liked in your book was your mixture of fiction as well as dealing with the facts about worrying. And it is a shaman woman that you use as a character in this book that I really, really enjoyed. So they're like little myths that you have put together. And I thought, this is great. And I'd love for you to share the story about what is heaven and what is hell.
Well, I came up with the shaman woman because I was tired of the wise man. So it's the shaman woman and the seeker. And so the seeker, you know, walks over the hills and the long ways and for 30 days or something like that, and comes to the shaman woman, who's sitting in front of her hut on the three-cornered stool. And the seeker says, shaman woman, what is heaven, what is hell? And she looks at him and she goes, you know, you're very foolish, you're very ridiculous. Is that what you came here to ask me? And the seeker just gets so upset, and he goes, oh, my God, what did I do wrong? Now the shaman woman just thinks I'm an idiot, and I'll embarrass everybody in my town, and, oh, this is awful. And he's pacing back and forth, going on and on like this. And she suddenly looks at him, and she says, that's hell. And then the light bulb goes off on over his head like, bing, and he suddenly sees what he was doing, and he goes, oh, I understand what I was doing. Oh, and she says, that's heaven. So that's the story of the shaman woman.
Yes, and I really, really enjoy that throughout your book, because I think that that is a wonderful way. Stories are a fabulous way of getting a point across. And you had another one about the shaman woman and the seeker. And it was a worm in the tea. And
oh,
I
yeah.
Thought, oh, this is really good. So share that story, too.
Well, the shaman woman says to the seeker, would you like a cup of tea? And he comes over and she starts making him the tea. But he's just all obsessed with some worry. He's not really paying any attention. And she hands him the tea and he glances in there. And all of a sudden he gets very upset. And almost chokes and because he thinks there's a worm in his tea. And she says, is that a worm in your tea? Or, actually, I've forgotten the punchline.
The reflection from
that you see. Okay, yeah, that's very good. See, you've got it. And meaning, once again, that we get so obsessed with this worry and myopic, and we start seeing things that really aren't there. He's not enjoying the tea.
No kidding. He looks at it, and all he can see is the worm.
Right.
And I think that's so reflective of how worry, when we allow it to take that patterning with ourselves, when we stress about so much that we can't, using an ancient adage, you can't see the forest for the trees.
Well, exactly. So that's all the problems with worry warning. Because it doesn't, we don't get anywhere, and we just upset ourselves. And so I came up with this concept of worry smart. I was reading that book, Emotional Intelligence, and in there was a list of the qualities of an emotionally intelligent person. And one of those qualities is the ability to soothe yourself. And I thought, aha, the worry wart riles herself up by this kind of thinking, talking in these extreme ways, whereas the emotionally intelligent, or the what I started calling the smart worrier, soothes herself, you see. So there's two steps, really, to the process. The first part is actually thinking about the and talking to yourself about the worry or the potential problem in a different way, so that you get some kind of a result that's helpful, usually a plan. And then the second part is realizing that you've been doing the work of worry and now you're anxious, and then deliberately taking some kind of activity to soothe yourself, to get rid of the anxiety, to stop the, sort of say, all right, that's the end of the worry, I've dealt with it now.
Absolutely true. You have a quote in here, a Burma Shave roadside ad. I thought this was great. Don't lose your head to gain a minute. You need your head. Your brains are in. I mean, I really like that one.
Yeah. Well, I always liked Burma Shave. When I was a child, we traveled constantly. We were constantly moving from one place to the other in these long road trips, like 2 or 3 days. And I'd be sitting there, you know, a little child looking out the window, and they'd have just very often those Burma Shade things along the highway.
I love to see the programs when they show them, and they have all of them. Now, let's talk about Cheryl for a minute. She was a great example that you had in your book, the woman who had found herself in a situation, and this is directly relating to your attitude about how to be a smart worrier.
I don't remember Cheryl specifically.
Well, with Cheryl, she had been the owner of a small toy company. And she said when they introduced their new bears, their distributor insisted on 50,000 of them being produced. And when I read that, that sort of touched a memory button, because I remember a woman, knowing a woman who did quality teddy bears out of fur that were just wonderful. And I know when I read this story, it reminded me of her, but she was just absolutely stressed to the max because she said 50,000 bears?
Right.
How in the world are we going to sell 50,000 bears?
Well, and then thinking about it in, you see, in more extremist terms, rather than breaking it down into a plan. I mean, obviously, she's thrilled that she's gotten this order for 50,000 bears.
Right.
I mean, that's the dream, but now that it's here, it's terrifying. And a lot of it has to do with the way that she's thinking about it. So instead of just thinking about it in a scary way, one step is to think about it more creatively or more in a problem-solving way. And there's this system developed by this man named De Bono, who specialized in creative thinking. And so there's six questions. The first question is, well, what are the facts about this situation? And then, you know, maybe she has a notebook and she thinks about her fears and worries and how she's going to do this and writes the facts down rather than just free-floating anxious thoughts. Then the next question is, how do I feel about this? And writes that down. Next, well, what's working here? And jots that down. Now, in the process, you see, she's taking control of the thinking about this situation, actually engaging writing and capturing it in a notebook is very helpful because it just gives you a feeling of control. So the fourth question is, what's possible? And then the fifth question is where most worry warts start and get trapped, which is what could go wrong? But you see, so it's through this prescribed way of breaking down your thinking that helps you pull it apart and think about it in a manner that will hopefully lead to some kind of a plan. Another thing is that, remember that, old cartoon with the devil on one shoulder and the angel on the other, whispering in your ear.
That's been a common thing that's often been done in many different
formats. Yeah, well, I've taken that, and I have on the one shoulder the fuddy-duddy, or the fuss budget is sitting there, and FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, F-U-D, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. The fuddy-duddy sits there and talks to you like a fuddy-duddy, you know, like, oh, my God. I mean, what are they thinking? Did I turn off the sandwich? I mean, what if this could happen? Oh, this getting you revved up and worried. And the other shoulder is the good friend. Now, anytime a friend comes to you with their worry, you can pretty easily say something that's helpful to them.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So when you catch yourself worry-warding, that's the fuddy-duddy talking in your ear. When you catch yourself and you suddenly go, oh, that's what I'm doing, you say, wait a minute, what would a good friend say to me? What would Donna say to me right now?
Mm-hmm.
And the person can almost always think of what Donna would say.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you do is you go, oh, what would Donna say right now? And then you say it to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happens here is, A, the good friend, it doesn't catastrophize and all of these go around and around in extremist type of scary thinking. It's much more like, wait a minute, let's take this step by step. Or, come on, you've had situations bigger than this before, or whatever Donna would say. And a person knows that. As soon as they're saying that, when they say that to themselves, see, the interesting thing is, you can only be saying one thing at a time in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then your body acts as if that's happening. So part of the strategy is to crowd. You don't just say, don't worry. That's not going to work. That's a vacuum. No, you crowd out the worry with another kind of talking to yourself, namely the way a good friend would. When you talk to yourself that way, the anxiety starts going down.
Mm-hmm.
See, so that's another part of becoming a smart worrier, is to talk to yourself like a good friend would. Another thing is that worry warts picture absolute horrendous outcomes. And they rarely happen. Once in a while they do happen, but they rarely happen. So one of the steps is to deliberately be picturing and imagining positive outcomes. That's really much more likely. And when you're picturing the positive outcome, you're not responding with anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so the part of the thing is becoming a better problem solver, basically, is what it comes down to. And a positive problem solver and coming up with a plan, working the worry through. But you feel anxious because there's unknown and uncertainty and some of the possibilities are not very pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
So that generates anxiety. See? So when your work of worry is done, that's when you take action to soothe yourself.
You talk about creative problem solving, and you have a chapter on looking for solutions. The quote by Norman Vincent Peale, of course, he's one of my favorite people anyway, become a possibilitarian. No matter how dark things seem to be or actually are, raise your sights and see the possibilities. Always see them, for they're always there. And that complements what you are saying here. And
so that's
many
right.
times mm-hmm. we think we should know it all, and many times we don't. Maybe we don't have the experience, and that's where brainstorming sometimes with someone else is really a good idea.
Exactly, or just breaking out of rut thinking and listing all those possible possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one of the steps of that DeVono, what are the facts, how do you feel, so forth. What's possible is one of those steps.
Mm-hmm.
And just breaking out, because sometimes thinking is really an internal behavior. Just like any other behavior, we get into habits. And it's very easy to get caught up into a negative thinking habit. It doesn't help in problem solving, and it closes down thinking of the possibilities.
You bring out a point in your book to create a place and a time to worry. Now, someone might say, you have got to be kidding. I've got to create a time and a place to worry. I'm worrying anyway. That's why you're calling me a worry wart.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's many things going on with that. First of all, worry is good, and we need to worry to work out plans. It's the mental fire drill. But the worry wart, it has this free-floating worry that invades everything all the time, every place, and it's out of control. By creating a place, and you want to keep it not contaminate another place. So maybe you have a chair by the window or something like that, a chair over in your dressing room, or I don't know where. But a place that you sit there, and that becomes the designated worry place. You go there with the notebook, and then as you do that a few times, the place itself will take on the power to trigger worry, actually, just like I can go into a place and I get this smell and it reminds me of my grandmother's attic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so smells and places and things can trigger experiences. So we go to the place. Pretty soon, as you worry there, you can start gaining control over the worry, sort of capturing it that this is where I worry. And then this is where I leave the worry. And if you become overwhelmed with worry, you go to the place. So you're trying to get the place associated. It's basically conditioning. Get the place associated with the emotion of the worry, and then you're doing these techniques to soothe yourself and experientially leave it there. And if you have a notebook and a worry comes in, you can write it in a notebook, and then you go to your worry place to worry about it. That way you start keeping it from invading all of your life. I mean, none of these things happen with one attempt. This
mm-hmm.
is for something that you get better and better at, that you do from now to the rest of your life.
It is always that level of awareness, mindfulness, and discipline. They make wonderful companions. The mind is like a wild elephant.
Right.
And this just dovetails right into what you have been discussing. Tell us a story about the seeker and the shaman woman and the elephant?
Well, the mind is like a wild elephant because what happens is, for example, you're saying one of the ways to soothe yourself after the work of worry to get rid of the anxiety might be a prayer. A lot of people pray. And we could also include as a prayer, loosely speaking, mantras, affirmations, this sort of thing. And so setting aside the spiritual aspect, the mantra, prayer, and whatnot, in itself, what are you doing? You're saying a bunch of words, and you're crowding the worry out. And as long as you're doing that, you're going to start feeling more, and these are soothing words, you're going to start relaxing and getting rid of the anxiety. Well, what happens is the mind is a wild elephant because you're doing this prayer and you're not thinking about the worry, but the mind, if you go out in the jungle and you capture a wild elephant, what they do is they put a big cuff on its leg with a chain and they bring it back to wherever they take the, you know, keep the elephant. Well, the elephant is wild, doesn't like this. The elephant rears up, it flaps its ears, roars with its trunk and switches its tail around. It's furious, and then it just takes off, starts running. Well, you don't whip it, you don't become furious. You go over there, you get the chain on the elephant, and you bring it back. Guess what? It's still wild. Mm-hmm. It's going to flap and switch its tail and run off again. You go over and get the chain and pull it back. Well, if you keep doing this over a period of time, the elephant figures out that you're the boss. Once the elephant realizes you're the boss, you can get up on that elephant. You can ride the elephant. You're now, you know, the rider of the elephant. Well, it's the same thing with the mind. Here you are thinking of your mantra or saying the prayer, and then the worry creeps back in. The mind, you know, it's wild. It takes off to the worry. And what you do is you don't get angry. You just catch yourself doing it, and then you just bring your wild mind back to the prayer. And then guess what? After a little bit, all of a sudden you'll notice that it's thinking about that worry again.
Mm-hmm.
It's taking off again. You just go, oh, you let the worry go, and you bring the wild mind back. So that's the whole idea of the wild mind is like a wild elephant.
You have a suggestion in your book that I really thought was very good, and that was to design your own personal permissive flashcards. And I thought this was really a good idea. Tell us about that.
Well, flashcards, you remember when we were in school, we had flashcards where you'd have the question on one side and you'd put the answer on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to find my list of permissive statements here. Anyway, one of the things we need to do is to be more permissive with ourselves, or we can do the same thing with changing things from should to would or other kinds of statements, even affirmations. You get your flashcard and you put your habitual sort of negative statement on the one side.
Mm-hmm.
And then you sit there when you're rational and can think it through, and you come up with the statement that goes along with it that's a permissive statement, giving yourself permission, you know,
mm-hmm.
like, I failed again would be a very negative statement where you're criticizing yourself, whereas a permissive statement would be, well, we all make mistakes. I learned from my mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you come up with your list of your typical little statements that you've learned. See, sometimes they're called automatic thinking, too. We don't even hear ourselves thinking these negative things. They just pop like little shortcuts, little abbreviated things into our minds. We've been doing it for so long. And then that starts triggering the worry or triggering negative emotions. Well, once you catch yourself saying these things and can write them on a piece of paper and then sit there and come up with the translation, you can make a little set of file cards. And the idea of file cards is that in order to really start using this, they've got to be right there on the tip of your tongue.
Mm-hmm.
The negative statement and the judgmental statement, that's right there on the tip of your tongue. But the new beneficial translation isn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you can't be just sitting there fumbling around trying to invent it ad hoc. So you drill yourself it's like telling your brain, okay, you know, I'm going to start saying these other kind of stuff. You can talk to yourself in lots of different ways. You don't have to, you know, and it's called the language of self-support.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can give yourself self-supportive statements, you can achieve a lot more, even if you're in isolation, even if you're around people who are putting you down.
True. You give a number of other suggestions, everything from when you're really highly stressed and worrying, go take a walk. Just walk until you've totally unwound from the anxiousness that you have. And you talk about laughter. You also talked about something that brought back some memories for me, because they were worry beads. And I know this is something that in the Middle Eastern culture, that just about everybody has them. I think more men than women.
Right,
but
right.
They are very much in their pockets, and they're there. Now, when I became acquainted with these years ago, the gentleman that showed me, he had a string of mother of pearl, and he said whenever he was in a very stressful situation, he did his prayers, and he would count his beads.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, now, this was really interesting for him to do this. And it is a tradition, I think, that anybody could adopt. They can make their own. And
well, yes, they can, see. And what's going on when a person does this, you see? They're in an intense situation. Their mind is thinking things. They're getting anxious. And once they've trained themselves on these beads, which are just conveniently in their pocket, they're engaging their finger. You hold the first bead, you know, in your fingers between, I guess, your thumb and your first finger. And then the person says their mantra or their prayer or their affirmation. I mean, we can make something up here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
a lot like the rosary, isn't it?
Yes, it is, very much.
And, you know, you say your Hail Mary. Well, you know, I mean, all these different systems, they have these things because they work.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying the words in your mind. While you're saying the words in your mind, you can't be saying the worry words. And
right.
You're engaging your fingers. And even the sensuousness of feeling can go around and around like this, and this dispels it. And then after you do this for a while, just the very, see, you're setting in conditioning. It's like you're programming the robot here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So after a person does this, I mean, they're doing it all the time for years. You know, it's like a tradition. Pretty soon, they get a relief just from touching the bead.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because it's already a system. They touch the bead, they can get into it faster, easier. It's very comforting. It's almost like the little kid with the favorite stuffed animal or the blanket.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Except it's, you know, a little more discreet, right?
Right, very discreet and very. You can make them large beads, small beads. It doesn't make any difference, but it is something that keeps the hands busy, and it affects a processing. It actually enables you to be mindfully present with whatever you are having to focus on in that moment. So it does that shift, which is excellent. Well, Dr. Potter, I know we're just about out of time here. It's been a delight having you as a guest. Your book is called The Worry Warts Companion. This is about 21 ways you can soothe yourself and worry smart. And I can tell you, you'll also enjoy the stories of
yeah.
Wise Shaman Woman.
Right.
And then go to her website, which is docpotter.com, D-O-C, Potter, P-O-T-T-E-R.com. And you'll find more information about her book and about the other things that she does and the programs that she presents. Is there something you'd like to leave a thought before we close out? We have about 30 seconds.
Well, that's a tough one. Just that worry is okay. It's okay to worry. In fact, you start off by just even watching yourself worry, become familiar with it, and then just try a few things. Don't set the bar too high. Just get a little better every day, just a little better practicing.
Thank you, Dr. Potter. It's been a delight having you as a guest today. Don't forget, go to her website, docpotter.com. Her book, The Worry Warts Companion, it would make a wonderful gift for that special friend or family member that you just sometimes shake your head about because all they do is stress themselves to the max. This would make a wonderful gift. This is Donna Sebo. And again, thank you, Dr. Potter, for being with
me. Thank you.
Today.
I've enjoyed it.
We are going to take a break. We're coming back in just a moment.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com. And find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hello, and welcome back. This is Donna Sebo, and we've got a caller waiting on the line, but before I go to that caller, I am going to give you the telephone number you can call in to if you'd like to talk with me directly today. Here it is, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And when you call in, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and I also like to know where you're calling from. And then after that, sit back, relax, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask a question about anything that you have an interest in. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to go right to our caller who's been waiting very patiently. Thank you so much. First name or initial, where are you calling from, by the way?
Rye.
I'm sorry, hon. What was your first name or initial?
T.G.
T.G.? All right, T.G.,
yeah.
Where are you calling from?
Rye, New York.
From Rye, New York. Okay. Well, glad to have you on the show. Now, TG, the first thing that I'm looking at with you is a process of analyzing. You are a very down-to-earth person. You like dealing with facts. You don't like to go off on tangents that are going to lead you in 1,000 different directions. You really like to be focused, and in that way you feel like you get things done. But for some reason you haven't felt as efficient or as focused as you would like to, and that has been disturbing you, and so you feel like you've got to have something to sort of bring things into a position of clarity. And I agree with that. I think that that's very important. And it won't take you long to put that all together. And if you need to brainstorm with someone, brainstorm, because all it takes is a few additional facts, and everything is going to fit together the way it is supposed to. But it is going to take some more time, and you are going to have to be consistent, and you will have to be patient. All of that is going to be in positioning for you. But again, you have to be patient. Also, what I am looking at is you're packing a bag. It looks like there's a short trip that's coming up fairly soon. And you're going to wonder, wow, is it really worth it? I'm not going to have the time that maybe I should have. Maybe I should delay it. And I would say it's probably a good idea that you're taking the trip. Even though it's not going to be as long and as involved as perhaps you would like it to be time-wise, I think even if it's just a couple of days, what it does, it gives you a break. And it enables you to be in touch with someone that is significant to you and also to spend that time and just take advantage of that little bit that you will have and enjoy it to the fullest. And then coming on back home, you're going to have enough things to handle at home that have to be taken care of. So I'm really not concerned about you. I think you're going to be fine. You just need to get some additional information so that you can deal with what I can see as a consistent picture, so that you can work towards that objective that you want, towards that picture of accomplishment that means so much to you. What would you like to ask me about today?
First, I enjoy the show because I am a warrior. And
glad. Good.
And I like the points that they made, so I'm going to try some of them with my room and my flashcards.
She had some real good tips. Mm-hmm.
Yes. My question is, do you see a move for me?
Yes, but not right away. Not right away. What I'm looking at is there are some things that have to be taken care of, and it's as if I feel like I'm in slow motion when mm-hmm. I'm focusing on this question. So to me, that is an indicator that I need to be busy with other things, doing whatever I need to do, let's say if you wanted to put your house up on the market in the spring, let's say you wanted to do that. Well, then just look at it and say, all right, if I want to do that, what things do I want to take care of prior to spring so that I know that everything is the way it's supposed to be? And then I would just make a list and look at it and just say, well, I could probably take care of all of this in 1 month, but I don't want to stress myself out. We've got the holidays coming up, blah, 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 blah. So let me work out a time schedule for it, and then I will look at all the things that I need to do. I'll set up the preparation, and I'll take it from there. And I think you'll be able to put the place up on the market. You'll be able to do whatever you need to do so that you can make the move when you're ready to make the move, which I think will be, you know, maybe in about a year. It could be a little bit more than a year, but not much from today.
Okay. I want to question your book called The Magic of God's Kiss.
Oh, the children's book, yes, God's Kiss.
What age group is that? What age group would you recommend it for?
That is for ages 3 to 10.
Oh, okay.
Three to ten.
Could get this online?
You can order it. Why not just give me a call at my office? Because what I'll do, I'll personalize the book for you. If you want
it for
the holidays. And this book is a multicultural book, and what we have found is that children, no matter where they are, no matter what their background is, they absolutely love it because it's a story of love, really. That's what it is.
Yes.
And so, yes, and I'll be happy to personalize it. So just give me a call at my office, and that number is 800-872-8852.
Thank you.
Oh, you're more than welcome. And by the way, Dr. Potter's book, she has so many wonderful things in it that if you decided to gift yourself with that, I would recommend that you go through it and read it and highlight with a yellow highlighter.
Okay.
And then the things that really push your buttons. And then I would say, you know, like doing the flashcards. She has such wonderful stories in there about the the woman shaman that I think are so nice. They're really good stories. So I'm glad you enjoyed her.
Great. Thank you.
You are welcome. And you have a wonderful evening now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo, and if you'd like to chat with me today, here's the telephone number to call in to 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And again, just like TG, all I want is your first name or your initial, and I love to know where you're calling in from. Now, I got an email. I wanted to share this with you. I got this email from John. And he said, I think your listeners might be interested in this information. So I'm going to pass it along because it's worth thinking about. And he said, with all of the technology we have today, you know, we have GPS systems, we have all kinds of things going on, we've got our cell phones. And this is what he shared. There was a story about a friend who said that someone she knew had their car broken into while they were at a football game. Their car was parked on the green, which was adjacent to the football stadium and specially allotted to football fans. Things that were stolen from the car included a garage door, remote control, some money, and a GPS which had been prominently mounted on the dashboard. Now, if ever you've had a GPS system and it's right there up on the dashboard, it's there because you want to see what it has to say. Right? Right. Well, when these people got home, they found their house had been ransacked and just about everything worth anything had been stolen. What they had done was this. They had used the GPS to guide them to the owner's home. They then used the garage remote control to open the garage door and gain entry to the house. The thieves knew the owners were at the football game. They knew what time the game was scheduled to finish, and so they knew how much time they had to clean out the house. And apparently, they brought a truck with them to empty the house of its contents. Now, this is the comment that was made. If it's something to consider if you have a GPS, do not put your home address in it. Put a nearby address like a store or a gas station so you can still find your way home if you need to. But no one else would know where you live if your GPS is stolen. I think that's a pretty good suggestion. So if you are a mile away from, you know, your favorite gasoline station or whatever, you could use that as your landmark, but don't put your home address in it. Also, when it comes to mobile phones, there is a woman who's changed her habit of how she lists her names on her mobile phone after her handbag was stolen. Her handbag, which contained her cell phone, credit card, wallet, etc., was obviously disappearing along with everything else. Now, 20 minutes later, she called her husband after being robbed from a payphone. She was telling him what happened, and her husband said this, I received your text asking about our PIN number at the bank, and I've replied a little while ago. Well, guess what happened? They go down to the bank. All the money that had been in their account had been withdrawn. The thief had actually used the stolen cell phone to text hubby in the contact list and got hold of the PIN number. Within 20 minutes, all of the money that was in their account had been withdrawn. So these are the tips that they give. One, don't disclose using the relationship between you and the people in your contact list. Avoid using names like home, honey, hubby, sweetheart, dad, mom, etc. And very importantly, when sensitive information is being asked through texting, confirm by calling back. Also, when you're being texted by friends or family to meet them somewhere, be sure to call back to confirm that the message came from them. If they did not send it, you want to know. And if you don't reach them, be very careful about going places to meet family and friends who text you. It's a sad thing, but we do have to pay attention to this stuff. And I really thank John for sending it to me because I think it's good information, and that's why I wanted to share it with you. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Give me a buzz if you want to chat with me today, 888-815-9756. We're going to be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedros. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna, and phone lines are open. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756, and I'll be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Also, I wanted to mention that if you're listening from the state of Washington, I'm going to be doing a special appearance at the King Bookstore in downtown Tacoma, and that is going to be on November 21st. That's a Saturday, and this is a wonderful day because we're having a special event called the Dickens Festival. Now, it's into its fifth year, and, you know, a lot of people come out for this because it's just a great way to get ready for the holiday season. And I learned today that I am going to be at King's Bookstore from 11 in the morning until 4. So I've been moved up an hour, and I wanted to be sure to pass that information along to you. So I'll be there doing many consultations. Now, the Dickens Festival, we're all going to be put in costume, those of us that are going to be working at the festival, and it's so much fun. But more than anything else, there's all of these wonderful activities that they have lined up that they are doing, and they've got carriage rides and all kinds of good things for our family to participate in. So go to DickensFestival.net, and you'll be able to find out all of the details right there as to what is going on, when, where. And as I said, I'll be at King's Bookstore, which is a wonderful place to come in to visit, and I'll be there doing many consultations, and part of the proceeds will be donated towards a particular charity that is going to be represented by the Dickens Festival this year. So if you're in the Tacoma, Washington area, come on down. It's going to be a fun, fun day for the entire family, and come by and say hello. I look forward to meeting you. How are you at winning at the lottery? Not too good, huh? Well, how would you like to know a guy by the name of Jack Swimmer? This fellow had a knack for numbers. It was just incredible. And when I came across this story, I thought, I've got to share this with you. In 1956, 4 weeks before the U.S. presidential election, there was a California paint manufacturer named Jack Swimmer who wrote down his prediction of the votes that would be cast for General Dwight D. Eisenhower. Now, this is what he put down. In Los Angeles County, 1,218,462. In the state of California, 2,875,637. In the whole country, 33,974,241. He also wrote a check for $5,000 and deposited both documents with a charity commissioner clerk in Los Angeles. Now, the clerk, whose name was Gordon Nesbig, he still sealed Swimmer's predictions in a brass container put that in a wooden box and deposited the box in the safe of the sheriff, and a guard was kept on duty to make sure nobody fiddled around with what this man wrote and what he had predicted. Now, after the election, newspapermen were called to the sheriff's office and the paper was taken out. Swimmer's predictions were 100% accurate, down to the last digit. He had offered the $5,000 to charity if he had been wrong, but he was so delighted with his success that he handed over the money anyway. Now, there was something that he did to enable him to get the exact number, but he refused to reveal his secret. People said, oh, he just had a lucky guess. But the truth is, he already had a track record because previously he had predicted the 1952 election results and the scores in a baseball World Series, and they were correct. Oh, my goodness. I know we'd all just like to know where he is. Bless his heart, he may not be with us anymore, but he set a record enough where it was written about and has been recorded for posterity. Stories like that are always a lot of fun. Donna Sebo, give me a buzz here, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And I want you to know my newsletter for the month of November is up and posted on my website. You're welcome to go to DelphiInternational.com and check it out. And you can read any of the editions that have been published. And if you have any comments or questions or something you might like to see in the newsletter, please send me an email. Send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. By the way, with the holidays coming up, do you have an absolutely favorite recipe that is the hit with the family, that is just something that has to be fixed every year at holiday time? Well, if you do, I'd love to know what it is. And if you have a special story about the holidays, I'd love to hear it from you. So send it to me via email, Donna at DelphiInternational.com, and you'll be sure to put in the subject line, The Donna Sebo Show, so that I'll be able to recognize it. I get so many emails that it's always nice to know when I have a listener, and if they'll just put The Donna Sebo Show in that subject line, then that makes me aware that it's relating to the program, and I'll be responding to you as quickly as I can. It's always amazing to me when people seem to think that animals are dumb. Have you ever heard someone call an animal dumb, assuming that they're not aware, that they don't feel? Well, I was watching a program last night on television, and it was about animals in Russia, and it showed a beautiful, beautiful owl, a snowy owl that's just spectacularly amazing as an animal. And this owl is really concerned because the food chain had been very dramatically affected. And this mother owl was out hunting and there wasn't food to be found. And she had two chicks. To my amazement, I learned that the owl, and when the environment is productive enough with food, will have up to 10 chicks. Well, because the food is less or almost non-existent, she had only two. Mother Nature has a very interesting way of regulating things. And the sad thing was to watch this mother owl, when she had finally caught some food and was able to bring it back to the nest, the stronger baby was the one that got the food, not because the mother owl didn't want the weaker one to have it. She tried to encourage the weaker one to feed, but it could not. And when you watched this animal, you saw how she cared and how it was a very anxious period for her, because she wanted both of her babies to live, but only one could. Life sometimes seems like it's not very fair, but the truth is, that is nature. Life is what it is, and we often don't like what we have happening in our lives. But I think what Dr. Potter said, when you're a worrywart, you're really not accomplishing very much. And Mother Owl, what she did is that when the time came where she knew there was nothing more she could do with the baby, then she focused on that she could take care of, and that was the surviving one. Many times that's what we have to do in life. We have to focus on what is right in front of us, what we need to focus on, what we need to take care of, what needs our attention. And what doesn't need our attention, we need to be able to put in its proper place so that we can balance our lives in the way that we want. This is Donna Sebo. It's been a delight being with you. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about the Almanac of the Infamous, the Incredible, and the Ignored. Wow, we're going to have some good stories to share with you. Join me and Juanita Violina for a wonderful, wonderful time and good conversation. Donna Sebo, remember always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. We'll be back here tomorrow, BBS Radio, Station 1. This is Donna. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.